Welcome to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by my good friend, Miss Nadia Cater. Nadia, how are you?
Hey Mike, I'm great. How are you?
I am good. I might sound a little more nasally than usual because I'm a little bit sniffly, but COVID's been going around like crazy, so I guess I'm lucky to just have sniffles.
Oh
Everyone I know
yeah.
has COVID again. It's like, what is this? That's so 2020.
Really? It's hitting bad in New York?
But it's super bad. But isn't science amazing? Because in 2020, COVID was like, oh my God. Like now it's like the flu. I mean, if you're not an idiot who doesn't get vaccinated, I don't know what those people are going through. But like for like regular real people, like getting COVID's like, oh shit, I have COVID. That sucks. But like, whereas like just 4 years ago, it felt like a death sentence. Isn't that amazing? Isn't science amazing?
Yeah, you know what's funny though is that there's still like, I agree with you, but I've noticed that when someone talks about, or like, anecdotally, if someone's telling me, oh, I was sick last week, or my husband's, or something like that, the first instinct is always like, oh, but it's not COVID. And I'm just like, does anyone still care about that?
It's a weird
It's like a carryover. It's almost like, it's not like you think it's something to worry about, but it's still like we're kind of still in that weird mode where like COVID is kind of scary, but mostly it's not, and you just go back to work after a week.
Well, you know what it is? I think COVID, where we were so aware of the fact that it was spreadable, and because of capitalism, we pretend like other things aren't spreadable. Like, oh, you've got the flu, you've got a cold, better go to work and breathe on people. So, but we and we act like that's not a big deal. But with COVID, we still remember that, oh, if your partner has COVID, then you might have COVID and you might be giving it to me right now. You know what I mean? Whereas, like, if you go, oh, my husband's got the flu, you don't go, oh my God. It's I really hoped at the time that like we would keep doing masks and we would like become a little bit more evolved when thinking about like work and sickness. But I'm dumb to think that we'd ever get better at something. Where did I get off having hope about things?
You know what I really miss from those times, other than like, yeah, kind of scary, but when you would
Animal
go to a
Crossing?
store, Animal Crossing, no, I replaced it with something else, but we'll talk about that in current obsession later. But one thing I do miss is going to a store and waiting in line, and like what they used to do is make sure you are at least 3 feet apart from the person in front and behind you. And I'm like, now it's like people are standing on my shoulders, and I'm like, where did this go? Why didn't we keep this?
And sometimes you'll see like an old store, you'll see stickers still on the ground that say like, stay 3 feet 3 feet apart, and you're like, ah, what a time. Oh boy. So this is PCMC Pop Culture Man Children. This is your one-stop shop for pop culture ephemera, non-toxic fandom, and talks about movies, video games, television, all sorts of fun stuff, streaming services, all sorts of silly nonsense. The stuff that makes you feel if you're like a lonely little nerd, it's stuff that makes you, it gets like a lifeline,
It's like
back
a
before it was cool. Like I think about like watching the sci-fi channel when I was in like sixth grade and not even telling anybody, being in the closet about the sci-fi network and being like, oh, I can't let people know that I watch, what's that fucking show with the marionettes? That's it's like an old sci-fi show with marionettes. Like Kid America.
Mystery Science Theater.
No, not that. It's like, oh my God, I'm gonna Google.
Wait,
Mystery Science is puppets. These were marionettes.
these were
Sci-fi.
Marion.
Like, you ever see Team America?
I've seen clips of it. I never watched the whole thing.
Okay, Space. But
Marion.
is it Space Patrol? No, Thunderbirds.
Oh, yeah, I would never have guessed that in a million years. I have not thought about it.
It's ridiculous. Here's a picture of Thunderbirds for you.
Did that come before? Oh no, wait, it's from it's
1965.
okay. At first I was like, which came first, the south Team America or this, obviously Team America, but
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they took from this because this looks exactly.
Absolutely. They absolutely did.
Wow.
Yeah, like I like the nerdy things that would that's what I want this show to be. I imagine that there's like some nerdy 10-year-old who's like, "Oh, it's a new episode of PCMC. I can't let my friends know I listened to it."
So that's the thing. It's like nerdy stuff isn't dorky anymore.
It isn't,
It's
it isn't. I feel like Marvel isn't dorky anymore because they've fucking taken over all the show business. But like if you're
ugh.
like I read comics or I play chess or I watch marionette sci-fi shows, no one's like, "Oh, cool." Like one time I told the story once on the show, people at work were having a conversation about like sci-fi fantasy and like they're talking about, I guess, Game of Thrones, and I jumped in with like "Have you guys seen that new Dark Crystal show on Netflix?" And they were like, "You mean that puppet show?" And I was like, "Yeah." And they were like, "No." And I was like, "Cool. All right. It was good talking to
Oh, so when I think of like when I think of dorky nerdy stuff, I don't even know if this is real or not, but do you remember in Saved by the Bell there would be the three nerds and they
Yeah.
would, that's what I imagine, that's what people
Like pocket
perception.
protectors, glasses with that are broken that have the tape in the middle.
Yeah, and they all have like really high nasally voices and
Yes.
laugh at math jokes and I was like, was that ever a thing? Or is this what media told us what a nerd is?
Well, I feel like starting with Revenge of the Nerds, it's like it became like it was like a 80s 90s stereotype, like the nerd. And it was open season on nerds. You can make fun of them all you want. I mean, Screech, he was their friend, and everyone shat on him. And he did nothing but
Constantly.
help them and invent things for them. And they were like, "Fuck you, Screech. Thanks a lot." But we've
Yep.
digressed.
We
Let's
have.
talk about some pop culture news. Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay, so here we go now. Somebody out there took AI and put all of George Carlin's comedy into it and made a new George Carlin album. It's
Oh.
called George Carlin, I'm Glad I'm Dead, because he starts joking about, "Hey, I'm dead. I'm glad I'm dead because of this." And some people are upset about it. Some people are mad about it. Some people are scared about it. Like, oh my God, there's a new George Carlin album. But I listened to 5 minutes of it. It was one, not funny at all. Like, at all. Like, things had the cadence of jokes, but there were no jokes. And then there's like a laugh track. So, like, people are laughing at nothing. But then it also didn't sound like him because whoever did the AI must have put in young George Carlin and old George Carlin. So the voice sounds like an amalgamation of both young and old George Carlin, like meeting in the middle. So it
Oh.
doesn't accurately like do an impression of him. So, I'm delighted when I see AI fail in that way.
I think the thing we're gonna see the biggest of before any AI gets good, we're gonna see so much shit, but it's gonna be so overwhelming. Like it
Yeah.
already is. I feel like there's so many images that I'll see a picture or a meme or something, and I'm like, there's no way a human being did this. And it's always AI art. It doesn't look real.
Yeah.
It can't, the thing is, AI can't think. And like a thinking person, and I know, I've worked in retail, so I've my fair share of idiots, but like an idiot can even differentiate between something good or they perceive as good as something that they might perceive as bad or other people. And AI can't do that. It kind of is just trying
Right.
to answer a question, but it answers the question by throwing a bunch of darts at the board and seeing what sticks. And it doesn't work that well.
Well, the way that it's like real intelligence is that we humans have a stockpile of info in our heads, data, if you will, that we can sort of grow out of and bounce off of. So that's what AI can do, but we have a little something extra. We have a little extra creativity to it. Like, but I don't know. See, it also it All of this opens up ways of thinking about creativity because people go, well, AI steals art. And it's like, but doesn't, don't artists steal art? Like, what's the difference between an AI doing a new, Picasso painting and some young artist being super influenced by Picasso and doing basically Picasso? I mean, I guess it will eventually grow. The young artist, if they kept going, would eventually become unique. But I don't know if anything's even unique. I don't, I'm not, I don't know. Some people are very scared of AI. I'm both interested in what it might bring and at the same time, like, not impressed by it yet. Although I do think it's having a huge culture impact. Something we're going to talk about later is something that's not AI that I think is influenced by AI. So I think us humans are starting to be influenced by the way machines think.
That's
Anyway, it
interesting.
sucks. George Carlin, don't listen to it. It sucks. It's terrible.
Well, I think it's kind of like George Carlin was a very person of his time. As we move further away from that, it's not referential anymore. So it's like, what's the point? There are other voices that we can be heard. I think that's what annoys me about AI is like, oh, here's another glimpse or seeing this actor who died 20 years ago in a new movie. And I'm like, who cares? Why is that interesting in any way? It's not having that kind of communication on
Well, I
what
think,
if.
yeah, I think we've all become like Alan Turings. I think like we're all out there like, okay, fool me, like wanting to be fooled. Like when somebody talks about AI, you don't go to AI art the way you go to art. You go to art to see something, intellectually or emotionally stimulating or something. You go to art for whatever reason. You go to AI art to see if it gets to see if you it fools you. You go like you look at a magic trick and try to see the strings. You know what I mean?
It's a totally different experience and an intention.
So it's weird. We have not yet had like a movie starring like some dead actor yet.
It's gonna happen. It's
Yeah, for
inevitable,
sure.
especially because you don't have to pay the actor for that.
Well,
You
it, yeah.
just pay people way less to create a system for creating that, whatever that looks like,
Well,
right?
some people, like famous actors, have estates and stuff, but then maybe, like, I don't know, we're gonna have to wait for faces to fall out of the public domain. Like, oh no, Humphrey Bogart's in the public domain now. We could start making new Humphrey Bogart movies for whatever reason.
I wouldn't be surprised, I'll be honest, because right now we don't have any laws about AI just yet. Not quite as sophisticated or regulated, and that's going to happen at some point. Just like, you had to have laws about internet use and what you can sell and put on the internet. But of course, that was after people were doing crazy shit on the internet. One thing that it kind of reminds me of is, I feel like there's a Simpsons episode for almost everything. There was a Treehouse of Horror episode where Homer, I think it starts out he accidentally kills a celebrity, and then once that person dies, they can use their likenesses in advertisements. So the company actually hires Homer to kill celebrities so that they can use all their faces and their voices and stuff in commercials. So he's like killing for an advertising agency. And I can't remember what else happens in that other than that's what happens. And I'm not saying that people are gonna, be systematically murdered, but I feel like what we're gonna we're you and I are gonna live through a time where someone's gonna die, and then we're gonna be counting down exactly what you said is like, oh, Katy Perry is coming up. Then we can get some Katy, we can make Katy Perry songs together or something. Like it's just such a weird thing to kind of that is like in the peripherals of our lives. Very close.
Yeah, I try to not be alarmist about things or, overly optimistic about things. I try to be very academic about things like this because it's just like things are going to change and you just have to look. I don't know, value judgments are maybe not important in a way. I don't know. That's just the way I'm thinking about it.
I think like I talked to this older relative I have he's in his late 60s, and one thing he commented on I thought was interesting was he was like, with every advent of a new technology, we get this idea that the technology is going to make our lives easier or put people out of jobs. But throughout my life, it kind of didn't work that way. Like, for example, he would say, you know, when I was younger, everyone had a secretary, and that was like a thing. So what happened with the internet and email? There's no more secretaries, really, not in the sense of like everyone having their own. For the most part, people don't, but they do that work themselves, right? So I think like with AI, it's going to be more like a natural process of AI will build something, and then there'll be people that like fix it, kind of like now. So like an anecdote, I used Chat GPT a couple of times. I sent it a few prompts just to play around with it, and I asked it to create a lesson plan for me, and it outlined a pretty decent lesson plan. But like the more I read it, the more I'm like, wait, some of this stuff actually doesn't, it was like a half-formed thought.
Well,
Like you
yeah,
didn't actually go into it.
it's like an imitation of life, like Douglas Sirk. You know what I mean? It's an imitation. It's like, can I fool you? Like, remember like the Harry Potter chapter that was like based made out of an AI? Like it kind of sounded like a thing, but it really isn't. That's what this George Carlin thing sounds like. You listen to it and it's like, this isn't really what a comedian sounds like.
No, it has some of the attributes of that, but it's very two-dimensional, if
Yeah.
at all.
Listen to it. Give it a shot. Give it a minute and just see how it feels. It's very weird. All right. Moving on. Starting next week, Godzilla Minus One Minus Color is coming to US theaters. This is a version of Godzilla Minus One in black and white.
Ooh, that's
It's
fun.
coming to theaters both in Japan and the United States and probably elsewhere. And they're calling it Minus One Minus Color. I'm excited to see it. I liked it a lot when I first saw it. I wanted to see it again, but I didn't get a chance. But I'll definitely catch this. I think it's a very cool idea. It'll make it feel like the original Godzilla. I like when they do things like this. So I'm definitely gonna check it out. Let's see, it starts in the United January 26th, it starts here in America.
That's exciting.
Did you see it?
No, I'm way behind on Godzilla and Planet of the Apes. I feel like I need like a 3 week period where I just catch up on all those movies.
You don't need to catch up on Godzilla. You don't need any to see any other Godzilla to see Godzilla Minus One. It's its own thing.
It might be, did I watch that movie with that Godzilla movie with Bryan Cranston in it with you?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I feel like that was one of the last times I saw a Godzilla movie, except for that time we were watching for the podcast.
Yeah.
But
That one was
like,
not good. None of the American
no,
ones are really good.
not really. We haven't quite figured out the formula, I think. I think we try to Americanize it too much.
I don't know what we do, but we get it wrong. But
I think
Godzilla
a
Minus One is definitely, and Godzilla Minus One is so successful. I always am proud of us when an international film has success because people will say like, oh, you know, Americans, they're dumb. They don't want to read subtitles. It's like Godzilla Minus One made a ton of money. And a few years ago, Parasite was huge. Like it also shows that the American market is like dying for
Not
something
Marvel stuff.
different. Yeah.
I think we got so tired of Marvel. We'll still go see them, but I think we're so tired of Marvel movies. We're looking for something else that will give us just something to think about.
I
I
think
don't know.
international movies are going to become popular with the next generation because they all watch TV and streaming with subtitles on. I read a whole article about, or was it a YouTube video? I saw a whole thing about why does everyone use subtitles now? And it was a sort of medium is the message answer. It was like twofold. One, the way that they record sound now is different, and film actors don't like project the way theater actors did or the way old movie actors did. And the other is that flat screen TVs, which are like old TVs now, actually have pretty shitty sound. Because you have to like fit sound into that little flat surface. So that's why, you know, watching TV with subtitles on is very popular for people hearing and non-hearing. So these kids, they have no problem with Godzilla Minus One because they're watching everything with subtitles. Jen watches everything with subtitles.
I do too. I and sometimes I if it's off or like whatever I'm watching doesn't automatically have subtitles, it takes me a few minutes to realize why the experience feels different. I'm just so
Wow.
used to it. Yeah, it's really bizarre. It's like it's a subconscious thing almost. And half the time I'm not even reading the subtitles. I'll just like reference it real
So
quick,
why do you keep
but
it on?
a habit. But there are older shows, and movies that don't always have the subtitles, or they're not as good as subtitles we have now.
Right,
Those are
right,
some
right.
really interesting reasons
Then there are
why.
AI systems that just do the subtitles, and sometimes they're wrong.
Yeah, it used to be like some over-caffeinated person late at night,
Yeah.
right, working on this stuff, and now it's just AI guessing.
Yeah. All right, you want to go to the trailer corner?
Trailer corner, yes.
Okay, so the first trailer we'll talk about is for the Netflix series Masters of the Universe Revolution. As you're hearing this episode, this will drop tomorrow on Netflix. This is a sequel series, or maybe you call it the second season of Masters of the Universe Revelation, the Kevin Smith produced Master Universe sort of reboot show. What did you think of this trailer?
I was never into Masters of the Universe. It, you know, I think I kind of came out like as a time after the heyday was over, and then now as an adult, you're seeing this kind of stuff coming back.
Yeah.
But and I love the She-Ra show, which is I know is a spin-off of that. But this trailer was great. I thought it was really exciting, and Prince Adam. I mean, it looks very anime inspired,
Sure,
like the
yeah.
art. Prince Adam looks really beautiful.
Yes, he does. He is a beautiful boy.
He's a beautiful boy
As
who
He-Man and not. As Adam, he's very lithe and
he's a
a
twink. It's
boy.
like
Yes.
twink and bear. And so that's kind
Oh, he's a twink and a bear. And do you
of
think, like, whether he bottom or tops is based on whether he's He-Man or Adam? Like, Adam is a
how
bottom. Or not, you know
I
what I mean? It might not. Adam might be a top, and He-Man's a bottom, or a service bottom. I'm not sure what a service bottom is, but you know.
I have to look it up every time I want to remember what that means. So it never sticks with me. It makes me wonder what people, and there's definitely like He-Man fandom and, you know, fan art and stuff like that. I'm just like, I'm wondering what how the audience interprets this. That
That
make
no, I think
these.
that's great. Yeah. Well.
Yeah, it looks fun. Are you gonna, did you watch the Kevin Smith one?
I did, and I did an episode on it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was really good. This looks even better. You brought up She-Ra. Did you notice that almost all of She-Ra's villains are in this trailer?
Which makes me wonder, is does that mean it's a new world, or is He-Man in the She-Ra universe, or what's going on?
Well, I know they're not connected. Like, that series was a standalone reboot, and this series is a standalone reboot. But it makes me wonder if they'll bring her in. You know, the rights are split up. And I know when they made the She-Ra show, people asked if they would bring He-Man in, and they said we can't. But I wonder with He-Man, if they'd be able to get the She-Ra rights. Because it seems like in this trailer, you've got everybody but She-Ra. You've got all of her villains. You've got Hordak, voiced by Keith David, perfect voice for Hordak.
Yeah.
And you know, he's turned Skeletor into like a cyborg Skeletor. There's a lot going on in this trailer. William Shatner's there for some reason. You've got Gwildor from the movies making his first animated appearance. I'm excited about that. And also Meg Foster, who played Evelyn in the movie, she's voicing somebody. So it looks good. And they've been the trailers for these. This series has been interesting because this one uses the song You're the Best Around from Karate Kid, which is like a jock rock kind of like 80s song, which is interesting to like put that over like sci-fi epic. But then in the last series, they used a similar song. I forget what they used I Need a Hero. I need a hero. So it's interesting. It's interesting because it's like it's leaning into like the 80s of it. Like, you know, if you're into this, you probably like it from the 80s. So let's put 80s songs in it, even though they're not in the show.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to like center us. They're like, hey, remember the 80s? But we want you to remember
Yeah.
this stuff, but then also it's
Yeah.
new.
It also feels to me like a wink of like, don't take this too seriously.
Yeah, I could see that. So just because I'm not familiar, is there a reason why there are two different series instead of the same series? The
Man and She-Ra?
no, the Masters of the Universe. So
Although there's the one that skews younger.
well, I'm talking about the Kevin Smith one.
Oh,
So
I don't
it's
know. I don't know why they branded it that way instead of calling it season two, but they've named the seasons. Like the first season was Masters of Universe Revelation. This new one is called Masters of Universe Revolution.
That's
They might keep
yeah.
going with that.
Well, it's just kind of odd
Res the next
because
one is Resolution, and He-Man just on New Year's Eve is like, you know, I'm gonna lose some weight this year. You know, I bought that camera and I said I was gonna take pictures and I don't. This year I'm gonna do it. And, you know, I'm gonna join a photography class. Masters of Universe Resolution.
I'm up for it. Like that trailer made me want to watch the series.
Yeah.
It's a good trailer.
And what I like they did what I liked what they did about the last What they did with the last series or season that they're doing with this one is they're actually changing. They changed the status quo, which is interesting because that's something the original show never ever did. It always reset after 30 minutes. Every episode's interchangeable. Whereas in this, like even in the trailer, they reveal like the king dies, and now in the after the last season, I guess everyone knows He-Man is Prince Adam. So it's like, does He-Man become the king or does Prince Adam become Prince, you know, King Adam. So, some people who are bad are now good. So, you know, it's really interesting. Although, you know, there are some nerds that fucking hate it and hate and were like mad about it. So, you
What are they
know,
mad about?
there was a female protagonist and they were like, you tricked us. You said this was a He-Man show. And then fucking, then it's about a girl. Rah!
Wants to watch a bunch of women doing stuff?
Yeah, I want to watch a beefy bear fight a skeleton. I'm not here to see chicks, man. Bring out those muscles.
This is different, but I once was having this conversation with a misogynist, and they were talking about sports. And you know, I don't know shit about sports. I don't care about sports.
A
But
masseuse?
no, a
Oh,
misogynist.
I get it. I was like, someone who gives massages?
Just someone who like takes
Someone who's a sexist, you know,
someone who
okay, a
hates women
misogynist.
and makes it their job, right? So,
Yeah.
so
Misogyny.
yes, yeah,
Now
so the
I'm on board with you. I get you now. So your
yeah.
face wasn't like in a hole and you were laying down.
Nah, all right. So I was in a kitchen. It was like one of those things where you're kind of at a family event, and then you're which forces you to be around people that you don't engage with, but you kind of have to because you guys know the third party. Anyway, yeah. So I'm talking to the misogynist, and somehow like sports came up, and like female sports came up, which I don't know how that came up, but he was kind of like, well, of course, women's sports, who wants to watch a bunch of women like, you know, run around or whatever? Like as if it's like not a serious thing. And I was like, no, but I guess you'd rather watch men jump around and tackle each other. Like, I don't know, what's your point? And the look on his face was just like, yeah, you know, misogyny can be really homoerotic, and I don't think people
It's
realize that.
so homoerotic.
Like, I don't want to watch women play football, but I want to watch a bunch of like muscly big men just tackle each other.
Right.
And that's more socially acceptable.
Yeah. So I'm excited about the next trailer I'm excited about. It's called Abigail. What did you think of the Abigail trailer?
At first, I'm like, okay, so it's like Taken. I'm not interested already. And then the bass drops, and it's not at all what you think it is. And I was like, oh, they got me. They
Yeah.
got me. It looks great.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited about it. Yeah, Abigail is a horror comedy that's directed by Radio Silence, who are the two guys that directed the last two Scream movies, and they did Ready or Not, which are all good movies. And
We
this
watched that together.
Ready or Not?
Was that the one with the bride that has to kill her whole family or she dies?
Yes.
We watched that. Yeah, it was before I left New
Was
York. Yeah, you and I went to what's the Alamo Draft House and saw it there.
it? Okay.
That
Yeah,
was
I love
great.
that movie. Yeah, this is like it's a little bit like Taken. It's like these people are they break into like this mansion and they're like holding this little girl. I guess the father's away and they're holding this little girl captive. And it's this little girl named Abigail, and they're like, and the lead character is Melissa Barrera from the Scream movies, and she's like, you know, just be a good girl and nothing bad will happen. And then the little girl's like, hey, I'm sorry for what's gonna happen to you. And then the little girl's a fucking vampire.
Ballerina,
Ballerina
vampire,
vampire.
and the trailer starts with her dancing in her little outfit,
Yeah.
and that's why. And
Yeah.
then she gets kidnapped, but then she like becomes a vampire, and she's like
Yeah.
hunting these people down
Yeah.
in her little tutu.
Yeah.
Like,
It
that's
looks
great.
incredible. And there's a lot of cool people in it. Giancarlo Esposito seems like the boss of the gang. And that actress from Freaky, she's also in that new movie, Lisa Frankenstein, she's in it. And it seems funny too. And today I Googled, is Abigail Dracula's daughter? Because I saw people said referring to her as Dracula's daughter, but they don't mention Dracula in the trailer. But when the little girl's dancing the ballet, you hear Swan Lake, which is used a lot in Todd Browning's, you know, Dracula with Bela Lugosi. So it makes you think of Dracula. And the fact that like her dad's like, I guess, a rich guy, like a rich old guy, like you get the idea, like, oh, maybe he's lived for centuries and acquired all this wealth. So I think he is supposed to be kind of like Dracula. And then the director said that this was a reworking of Dracula's Daughter, although not really, because I saw Dracula's Daughter recently, and it's a pretty queer movie. It's about an adult woman who does not want to be a vampire, but by God, some nights she's so lonely, she goes out and finds a beautiful young girl to suck her blood, and she feels guilty about it. It's incredible.
Wow, that's really gay.
Yeah, it's pretty gay.
What do you
They talk
watch it
about it on
on?
Queer for Fear.
Oh, yeah, you're right. They
Yeah,
do.
it's pretty good. So I don't see any of that in this, but and also her name's not Abigail in that. So I don't know where Abigail they get the name from. But anyway, it looks awesome. I love a little kid vampire because it's the perfect incongruity. You know what I mean? It's a perfect contradiction. To be young and youthful, but also forever alive and a vampire. I mean, like the best is like, or like the template is like Claudia from Anne Rice, like the little one that in the movie she was played by a child, Kirsten Dunst.
I think it's that also it's just so funny that a child is like
Right,
hunting
and then there's
people
like a
down.
guy's like, "Oh my God, she's fucking flying now! Oh my God, she's running after me!" Like. It's gonna be super fun to just watch her murder them all. And it even seems like a little bit of Megan in there because at some point she's like dancing weird. And then at one point she's dancing, like waltzing with a headless corpse. I can't wait to see this.
Do you feel like movies have gotten better in the last like 10 years or so? Like, I feel like there's just more exciting things going on.
I think that horror is in a good place right now.
Okay, yeah, that makes
And I think
sense.
horror comedy is. I feel like a lot of the big horror movies of the last like 10 years have been had a comedy element in it, like Megan.
Yeah.
So it's exciting. And what's interesting is this is Universal, and Universal was calling it a Universal monster movie, which is interesting way to market this thing. But they made clear that this is not connected to like the new to that movie Renfield, which I walked out of, it sucked, or that movie Invisible Man, which I thought was really good. They were like, these are all Universal monster movies, but they don't connect, which I think is much better, because like how would something like this connect to the very serious like Invisible Man movie?
I don't know. I guess Abbott and Costello would have to visit both.
Yeah.
That's it. You notice that we don't really do that anymore. That kind of let's take a property we already have and do a funny version of it. It's not, or like have comedians in it. That's not really like a thing.
Right.
I would love to see a horror movie with comedians in it.
Right. Like if they did like a new Scream and it was like Jack Black in Scream, and he's like, oh, someone's on the phone, whatever he does.
Jack Black meets the Wolf Man.
Yeah. You don't see that shit anymore. I'm excited for Abigail. It's great. I love a little murderous girl is always iconic. It's definitely, there's definitely a Megan influence. They're definitely like, how do we do our own Megan?
Well, we're just talking about a trailer. We haven't seen it, but I think this is a great way to go because there's an influence without kind of just directly lifting from the material.
Right. It's because she's not this AI going crazy like Megan. She's a little vampire girl. At one point she's like, what can I say? I like to play with my food. And I'm like, icon. You're a fucking icon. I cannot wait to see this movie.
I'm ready to see around Halloween little like vampire ballerinas running around.
Absolutely.
Please.
And these directors are so good. Do you remember the end of Ready or Not where like everyone's head is exploding? It's so visceral and disgusting.
Love
It's
it.
so good. It's so good. All right, so this is the big one. The last trailer we looked at is cool, and this is getting a lot of traction online. It's called This Is Me Now. This Is Me Ellipses Now. And this is a movie. In the trailer it says from the heart, soul, and dreams of Jennifer Lopez. And this is the movie that I was referring to before when I said this seems like a movie that's influenced by AI art. Because you look at this trailer and it's like, I see like Singing in the Rain in it. I see Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times. I see fucking Interstellar in it. It looks like Cloud Atlas. It's like, it's like, it's a memoir, comedy, drama, musical, sci-fi epic about Jennifer Lopez. Who's like her character is a sex addict, something, something. It's just banana. It really feels like AI. They just put all of pop culture in a blender and then like put it out, and that's what it is.
It looks hilarious. I was like, this is the most narcissistic thing I've seen since insert any Kanye West thing. What was
Yeah.
that? It was just so.
It has Moonwalker energy. You know the Michael Jackson movie Moonwalker? It's the movie he made that's very like barely narrative.
You know, I didn't watch that movie, but I played the Moonwalker video game.
Yeah, who didn't?
Okay, you know what? Looking up for a description of Moonwalker, experimental anthology musical film starring Michael. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
Duh. Yeah,
Joe
that's
Pesci's
it.
in it as a bad guy who like wants to like brainwash children or something. It's very weird. Yeah, did you hear Neil deGrasse Tyson's voice in this trailer? I was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson, what are you doing here? What is going on in this movie?
He was in the blender of the pop culture
Yeah,
nonsense.
I guess.
That, yeah, I don't. There was also, did you see that, the what you call the modern times part where it was like there's a bunch of workers but what
Yes.
looked like a giant mechanical heart, and I'm like, what the hell is this?
Right, and she looks like she's wearing a spacesuit or something. What's interesting is Ben Affleck's in it, but he's not in the trailer at all, which is very weird. All right, let me read you. Wait, let's look at this cast list.
Okay.
Ben Affleck, Sofia Vergara, Jennifer Lopez, Kiki Palmer, Trevor Noah. Who's this girl? Oh, Bella G. I don't know this. Oh, this she plays her as a kid. Oh, wait, see, it says young Jenny. So she is herself in it, I guess. Kinda.
Is Jennifer Lopez a sex addict that worked in a heart factory?
Making a kaiju heart? It's written by Jennifer Lopez and Matt Walton. It's directed by Dave Myers. What else has he done? Oh, The Hitcher remake and videos. Just videos. Yeah, people have been tweeting about this a lot and talking about it. It's pretty fucking unhinged. It's insane. There's like weird dialogue in it that sounds like AI wrote it. Like there's some dialogue in it where they're like, I guess she's like a sex addict meeting or something. Someone's like, oh, what does he say? He says something like, you know, it's hard to know anybody. And she's like, not even myself, or some shit like that. And it's like, what? What do you say?
It's also going to be an out it's an album, so
Sure. Because it's a musical. It's gonna have songs in it. It's weird because Taylor Swift made a ton of money with that concert film. So you think more people would be like, okay, let's just do concert films. Like that's simple enough. And then Jennifer Lopez was like, oh no. How about Cloud Atlas slash Modern Times slash Interstellar slash Singing in the Rain with me? And I'm a sex addict.
yeah, I sometimes when I see trailers and stuff, I just really wonder what how did this pitch meeting go?
It was her going, I want to make it. And then someone else going, sure, here's some money. That's it, right? Because, like, no, like, screenwriter would write this and be like, this is going to be a movie. This insanity. This stinks of vanity projects.
Do you remember that Kanye West like art film?
No, I do not.
Oh my God. I watched it like in grad school
Did
and
you?
yeah. What man. It was so bizarre. It was it Runaway?
Is
I
this
can't
before
even.
he was a complete anti-Semite?
Yeah, it was like he was still, you know, really arrogant and had this like reputation of that, but before he went deep down the genocide pipeline.
Sure.
Man, was it? It basically was almost no dialogue kind of art film that kind of followed. And like he had like this dancer that was like one of his ex-girlfriend that looked
Yeah.
exactly like his ex-girlfriend in it. And at one point there's this giant like paper mache Kanye head in it. And it was just like watching it, I'm like, this is visually fun, but also stupid. It's like it's the coolest thing I've seen in a bit, or it's the dumbest thing I've seen in a bit, or it's both.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to see these egotistical. I mean, to be an actor and a star, you have to be a huge narcissist because you gotta think about yourself all the time and
Yeah.
cater to yourself, and people are always up your butt, catering to you, and you have
Yeah.
all this money, so you become a megalomaniac in some ways. So
Sure.
it's fascinating when they get this money to actually play on that, and we can see them for what they are, you know?
Yeah.
It's I want to see it though. I want to see that.
I absolutely want to see it.
Was like, I can't possibly fathom what is going on, and whatever expectation I have, it's going to be completely different from what she's decided to put in this movie.
I
So
think it's
I'm
coming
ready.
to theaters, so I can't wait to buy my ticket and take a ride. What if, seriously though, what if it's like a masterpiece? Like it's like Citizen Kane. It like changes film forever, and then you and I just look like idiots.
You know, Mike, I'm ready for that. I'm absolutely,
I'm ready for
I
that
can't
too.
wait.
But you see what I mean when I say it seems like this is a movie influenced by AI?
Yes.
Because
It's
there's
like,
homage, right? There's homage, but homage has a intentionality behind it. Like when I do, like if you do an homage, it's like this is me, an artist, homaging an artist I care about. So there's authorship there. This feels like an AI doing, you know, just looking through its data banks and finding images. Like it doesn't feel like there's an intentionality behind it, in a sense.
No, I know what you mean. It doesn't. It just feels like this looks good. This will be interesting. I'm gonna put this right here.
Yeah.
It's very odd, but I'm ready. And you know, as a cynical person, I actually prefer for my for to be wrong. I want to be wrong because
Sure.
I'm a natural cynic. So I'd rather be wrong in this case. Like this is an incredible experience that influences Generation Z to be big artists or something. Like, please do it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go there and like, oh, I knew it's crap. Everything's crap, blah blah blah. I don't need that in my life.
I agree. All right, with that sentiment, let's take a break and we'll come back with a chill sesh. Welcome back to PCMC. This is the chill sesh. This is the shesh where we chill. This is where we talk openly and without structure about what we're reading, watching, consuming, just the stuff we're chilling with. Nadia, what are you chilling with?
What I'm chilling with is a memoir by Jacques Pepin.
Okay.
He was a French chef who just became like a celebrity chef, and he was very influential, especially when moving to America. It's called My Life in the Kitchen. Yeah, The Apprentice, My Life in the Kitchen. And what I'm just enjoying about it, and what I love about food memoirs, especially from people that work in food, is just that kind of love and appreciation for the craft of cooking and baking. Yeah, it's just, this guy has just had a pretty interesting life. He lived through World War II as a child.
How old is he?
So, oh, he's dead by now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think he's, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's dead. But yeah, but he just writes about his childhood and growing up in France and working in kitchens and moving to America and like becoming part of that scene. So
Okay.
it's kind of like, that's where I'm at right now. I've been kind of chilling with food stuff. Like the last food book I read was called Garlic and Sapphires. And that was a memoir by Ruth Reichel, who is a food writer and editor. And that particular memoir was about her life as a New York Times food critic. So there's a couple of years of her life. And what she would do is put on costumes and pretend like dress up as different people and go to restaurants and review them so they wouldn't know who she is. So she would go to like yeah, so she would go to like three restaurants with the same character and then retire that person. So it's like not to raise suspicion. Like she had one where she was like dressing up like an older Jewish woman, like reminded her of her own mother, and would actually act like in character. It's very silly, but that's what she did. And
That's awesome.
Oh yeah, overall in like the food stuff that I'm reading, it's just because it's very meditative. There's not a, you know, there's not really a danger or stuff to work out or really big drama. It's like people who love food and figured out a way to make it really work for themselves. And that's kind of what I've been enjoying. I flew out to California last week to visit family. So that's when I started the Jacques Pepin book. And I'm like, you know, this is a great book to read when you're on vacation. It's
Okay.
just smooth, it's simple, and the way he describes food is just so delicious and just, it makes me want to just eat and just love eating.
Do you cook?
Sometimes I do. I mostly do savory things, so like I'm really big on soups and stews, rice bowls, very simple
Okay.
stuff. Yeah. What about
Okay.
you?
I'm not a huge cook, really. You know, I make a lot of eggs and hamburgers and shit. Like I could just apply heat to things. I'm not very good at cooking. Have you seen The Bear? Do you watch
Oh man, yes, I love that show.
Yeah.
I'm behind on it, and that show gets super stressful. Like,
Sure, for sure.
really stressful, but just the stuff they make looks so good.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's like it's this comedy drama, very intense character show, but like sprinkled in that are like recipes and all of this real knowledge on how a kitchen works and this basic this look into a real subculture and like all of this like food porn, like these beautiful shots of like food being made. I mean, it's kind of like that Jon Favreau movie Chef.
That we also watched together.
Yeah,
that was definitely a food porn movie.
Yeah.
I love food movies, man. They're so good.
Well, next week we're gonna talk about a food movie.
Yeah, we'll continue this at that time.
Yeah.
What are you chilling with?
Oh, you know, I saw the Mean Girls musical. I loved.
Oh, you loved it?
Yeah. Oh, I only saw the original film once, and I liked it. So I, just from a point of view of what did I have a better reaction to, I enjoyed this new one better. I can't really say if it is better or not, because I haven't seen the first one in like over 10 years. I do feel like the wildness of the story works very well in a musical setting. That was good. Me and Jen saw The Boy and the Heron. I fell asleep out of sheer boredom. It was just so, I don't want to belabor it. It's a lot of people love it, and good for them. I love when people love things. Well, you know, just like yesterday, I got Peacock. I finally broke down and got Peacock, the
Okay.
NBC streaming network, because me and Jen really wanted to watch the Ted show because we love the Ted movies, Ted the Talking Teddy Bear. So we watched the Ted show. We watched like the first four episodes. We really loved it. And then last night, I was like looking through stuff, and I was like, they don't have a lot of good movies on this. But I was looking through the shows, and I found all of Columbo. So
Oh.
I've watched two already in the last 24 hours. And I gotta tell you, I love Columbo.
I love Columbo.
Isn't Columbo incredible?
It's such an interesting concept because, I mean, you gotta think of it like it's not a very attractive guy, Peter Falk,
Right.
and I who plays a detective that kind of plays stupid.
Yeah.
And what I really like about it, the show, is like they show every episode is almost like a movie. It stands by itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't, unless they had like two-part episodes of it, which I haven't seen. I used to watch Columbo on television,
Yeah.
and they have a bunch of random episodes on
Yeah.
Prime. So what's really fascinating about it is that the audience knows who the killer is,
Right. Not
and
a mystery.
it's not really a mystery. No, it's more like it would be like the mystery is how does Columbo catch him? Because
Right.
we know.
I've
The call is
heard,
good.
yeah, I watched a video essay about Columbo recently, and they used the term how catch 'em. Like instead of a who done it, it's a how catch 'em. And I don't know if that person coined that phrase or if it's something that's been used before, but I love the phrase how catch 'em, because that's what it is. Like, and the first two episodes that I've watched, I'm gonna watch them in order. In the end, I don't know if, I don't remember if he always does this, but in these two episodes, he actually t when he gets the guy to like give, it's almost like chess, because sometimes it's not necessarily that he gets them to confess, but he gets them to give it up. He gets them to be like, ah, you got me, I forfeit. So it's like chess in that way. It's like a checkmate. And in both the first two episodes, he actually explains where he like what it was that made him figure out who it was. So there is a mystery there, right? Like, we know Columbo is talking shit. We know that he's pestering people and he's needling people, and it's this weird cat and mouse dialogue game. And what's interesting is the first two episodes. The first episode is about a mystery writer who kills somebody, and he thinks he's like a genius. And then the second episode is this like high class like private detective to like rich people. And he also classes such a big thing. Like they look down at Columbo like a schlub, and he lets them believe that as he is like getting closer to them. It's just so fucking brilliant. It's so good. Ugh.
Absolutely. I really love Columbo. I've watched a lot of mystery movies. I haven't seen anything or well, more television, but I haven't seen anything quite like it. There really isn't a lot of how catch-ems. There's always whodunits, but I feel like a great vein is not so much the twists, but how that person gets caught or how that
Right,
person falters. I think
because
that's the best part.
on TV we're really used to police procedurals and going through the procedure, arrest, interrogation, trial, whatever. Like that's what every law and order. But this is like it is a procedural, but you don't really see his inner workings. I mean, really, if you think about it, Like Columbo, if you look at the structure of every episode, Columbo is the villain. Like the protagonist is usually the killer. We begin with the killer. Columbo doesn't come in for sometimes a half hour. We see the killer do their thing, and then this guy comes in who they think, oh, I'm smarter than him. So then they underestimate him, and then he eventually gets them to fucking forfeit. It's incredible. So there's the value out of Peacock.
Well, don't they also have all of Brooklyn Nine-Nine
I don't care.
now?
They also have, well, this is a show that people say is like Columbo. I haven't seen it yet. Poker Face.
Ooh.
With Natasha Lyonne. Who is it? Yeah, Natasha Lyonne. Yeah.
I've been wanting to see that, but I don't want to pay for Peacock.
Neither do I, but we really wanted to watch the Ted show, which is good, by the way. It's pretty funny.
Is it as good as the movies?
No. But what's interesting is it actually reminds me of Alf, because it's about
Okay.
it's very like sitcom-y. I mean, it's one camera, so it doesn't look like a sitcom, but it's a very sitcom-y setup, and it's about the main character from the movies when he was a kid. So he's like living in the house with his parents and his older cousin, and then just the talking teddy bear. So it's hilarious. It's like very domestic. It's really fun.
Is it as dirty as the movies are?
No. There's more. It's less dirty, less offensive, but it still feels like the spirit of the movies. There's actually a really funny bit where they go to a McDonald's and they get like apple pie, and the older cousin who lives with them is like, all right, Ted, like be careful because these always burn your mouth. And he's like, I'll be all right. And he takes a bite and it burns his mouth, and then he throws it into like a bunch of leaves and they set on fire, which is hilarious. Because they do always fucking burn you. When's the last time you had a McDonald's apple pie?
God, I can't even remember. More than a decade.
Really? I'd say probably like a year for me.
Ooh.
If I'm for they don't have any kind of vegetarian shit. So if I'm forced to get McDonald's, I get fries and an apple pie.
How often does that happen, though?
Jen loves fucking McDonald's, so it happens more than you would want.
Wait, what does Jen love from McDonald's? Like, what's her order?
Fries. She just gets fries and soda.
I mean, they are really good fries.
Jen eats very, my girlfriend Jen, she eats like a bird, but the things she eats are unhealthy. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
she'll buy like a thing of Oreos, and like whereas I would eat the whole thing in a day and hate myself, she'll have like three and then put it away, but like those three will have been her lunch. You know what I mean? Like it's she doesn't
I guess that's the way to
overeat.
go. She undereats, but with high calorie foods, like calorie dense
Yeah,
food.
but she doesn't do it on purpose. Like she's just, I don't know, she just eats like a bird. Like I've never seen her finish her plate ever. Like we go out and like she takes like three bites and she's like, "Oh, I'm good." And it's like there's still you know, anyway. So I admire the way she eats. Yeah, but you know McDonald's fries are not vegan because they use some kind of like meat powder or something
The
to
hell
add
is meat
flavor.
powder?
Some sort of like some cow powder. There's like beef involved, of course, in their fries.
Sure. I mean, you could have just used MSG, but let's use cow powder. That's
Yeah. But as you said, McDonald's fries are fucking incredible.
they're the best. Oh, natural beef flavoring.
Natural beef flavoring made entirely out of beef hooves.
It says it contains milk, which is even more confusing. Like, so is it like beef hooves and milk? Like, what is in this?
It's so weird to be like, oh, our French fries aren't vegan. Like, what?
If you're gonna be vegan, I think you're gonna have to accept that most of the time, unless you're eating like raw vegetables, you're gonna have to cook at home because there's
Yeah.
stuff in American food that we have no idea has animal
Yeah.
products in it.
I'm not a
It's
yeah. I'm not a vegan, I'm a vegetarian. But for a while, I was really into the potatoes at Boston Market. I was like, these potatoes are fucking, I'm living for these potatoes. And then I went one time and I saw how they make them, which is they put them on a grill underneath the rotisseries. So the chicken fat is like dripping off and onto the potatoes, which is what's making them delicious. And I was like, oh, I can't eat these more.
Oh my, that's too bad. I mean, you asked me when's the last time I had McDonald's apple pie. I can't even tell you the last time I was in a Boston Market. That had to be like more than 8 years ago.
Boston Market's a good fast food choice if you're a vegetarian. So is T Taco Bell. I go to Taco Bell all the time because you can sub out beans for meat any with anything.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I fucking love Taco Bell.
This is not a it's not a chain, but in Albuquerque there's this new fast food place called Lucky Goose,
Okay.
and it is vegan fast food. So it's like
Interesting.
a Beyond Meat burger, everything they make, all their shakes are vegan, and it tastes exactly like fast food. Like, it's so fatty and delicious, but there's
Incredible.
no animal products. I was like, this is a feat.
Yeah.
This is good job, guys. Like, you knocked it out of the park.
Shake Shack has vegan shakes now.
Oh, okay.
And they're not bad. So does Johnny Rockets, which is
Oh
if you
my
could
God.
find a Johnny Rockets.
Where do you find Johnny Rockets?
There's one left. I forget where it is. It's in New Jersey somewhere. There were
That
two
makes
left
sense.
for a while, but then one closed, sadly. The
Okay,
problem
I.
is Johnny Rockets is also like any Johnny Rockets you've ever been to has like flies. Fly like it's always disgusting. At some point that corporation just stopped caring about all of its restaurants, which is why they probably are failing miserably. But there's like one we still go to and God damn if I don't enjoy a fucking Johnny Rockets.
I remember distinctly the last time I went to Johnny Rockets. So it was before I moved to New Mexico. I was on a road trip and we decided to go to a wolf sanctuary that is all the way out on native land.
Sure.
So there's nothing around, right? It took 2 hours to get there. We visited wolves. We saw what they do, whatever. We had a guide talk to us about their sanctuary, how they protect wolves and whatever.
Whatever.
And whatever, and like halfway back, so and you're going through large swathes, and I think this is something that people don't understand about America that much, is like America's huge. There's
Yeah.
so much space where there's nothing, and
Yeah.
I it's so unusual to see that. So there's nothing around, not even gas stations, and then we finally, like, we're an hour away from Albuquerque, and we find a casino, and in the casino is Johnny Rockets. So we go through the casino to eat because there was nothing else around, and it was a long trip back to the city, and it was okay. It was fine. We got burgers, we got
Yeah.
fries. We were in a casino on like a Tuesday in like the early afternoon. So, it was depressing. You ever been in a casino? It's
Yes, I have
depressing.
been in a casino at many times, and it's depressing in the morning. It's depressing always. If you
Evening, same supper time.
observant enough, in any casino, you could look around and find somebody crying,
Oh, God.
because somebody has lost everything. Somebody there just lost their life on a game of chance.
While smoking a cigarette, because you could still, the casinos, you could still smoke inside, especially the ones that are on reservations.
Yeah.
So smoking a cigarette, sitting in a diaper in front of a machine for 6 hours, and then they just lost their house. It's awful. It was I don't ever want to go back, but that's what I remember of Johnny Rockets and like that weird nostalgia 50s that we grew out of. Now we're in nostalgia 80s and 90s.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So you're the only other person I know that has the Criterion Channel streaming service. What have you been watching on Criteria?
Oh man, mostly I've been watching like featurettes. Like, I haven't watched a
Okay.
movie. So yeah, the last thing I watched was, oh geez, it's been a little bit now. It's been like more than a week. Me going away kind of threw off my whole timetable. But I think I was watching Adventures in Movie Going. So I was watching, just like listening to Tessa Thompson talk about just her life in movies and her
Oh, cool.
influences. I love that series. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah, I think I watched the Guillermo del Toro one.
Oh, I gotta watch that.
Yeah. I over the last week I watched the three original Mad Max movies,
Oh, whoa.
which I had never seen. I had only ever seen Fury Road, which I
What do you
loved.
think? What do you think of the old ones?
They're good. I think that two is probably the best of the original three, but what's interesting is like the best one of the whole series is four, and I'd say the worst one of the whole series is one. So
Wow.
it's like a backwards series where each one actually gets better.
That
I
never
mean, I don't,
happens.
I do think two is marginally better than three, but one's barely even like post-apocalyptic. Like the world is the one is in the future, but the fall of society is supposed to happen between one and two.
Oh.
And then, you know, I get, by four, it's like all crazy. And there's the new one coming out, the Furiosa movie.
Is that a prequel?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I, but you know what? That's what's great about Criterion is catching up with things you've never seen or you've always wanted to see. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna watch all the Mad Max movies. Only the first one is on Criterion. I had to look up the second two because I was like, now I gotta watch them all.
What, where do you find the other ones?
I think I had to buy them from Amazon or you know Prime,
You know,
rent.
when, yeah, okay, yeah, rent them. One of the worst things I would say about streaming services is now we're getting to a point where everything's splintered off,
Yeah.
and you can't just have one place. Like, I feel like hypothetically, then I feel like I'm sounding like an old bag, but like, you could go to a Blockbuster once
Yeah.
upon a time. And just be like, you know what? I'm going to watch all the Mad Max movies this week. And then you could pick them up, all four of them, and go home, right? And like, but now you have to like jump around and pay for things, and you're probably paying more than you would have if you just rented them from a Blockbuster.
But you know, a lot of people are very like, or there seems to be a new emphasis on physical media now that like Best Buy stopping selling them, and Christopher Nolan is a big advocate of physical media, and like I own very little physical media. I understand the power of it and how you know it can't be taken away from you the way like something on streaming can be taken away from you. But I do have to say, in terms of literacy, I see so much more because of streaming, right? All, like, yes, I pay $12 a month to a million different things, so it's basically I'm paying like what we used to pay for cable. Okay, it all adds up. But at the same time, like you know, like if I had to like even renting movies at Blockbuster, I would have to go back three times to rent all of the Mad Max movies. You know what I mean? Like so. I don't know, like I often I just like turn on, you know, whatever it is, and then I mean everyone does this and just scroll through and go like, okay, what do I want to watch? And I find like I'm getting more. I think it's such a, you know, especially for younger people, like it's such an amazing time for literacy, media literacy. Like I don't know how people were ever scholars before, or like old scholars that were film scholars before even video. Like how you went. You have to have lived someplace where you had a theater playing everything.
Yeah, also what's it called, like libraries that have the film, and you'd have to be in the know. I think, okay, I see what you're saying. You're saying it's like a it's almost a democratic experience in a sense. Like, you have more access
Not
than you would
democratic because
before.
you have to pay for it, but it is
Okay.
it's much greater access. It's much greater ease. You like yes, you don't own it. Right. Yes, I pay for Criteria, and things come and go on it. And they tell you, you know, there's a section that on a lot of streaming services that say this is what's going. So it's like watch it now before it goes at the end of the month. But so you don't have that feeling of ownership like we used to have, or I used to have when I collected tons and tons of DVDs. But now I see more. You know, like I think about like when I was a young nerd in like the beginning, like the end of high school, early college, and I had like tons of DVDs and I was like, I want to be a filmmaker. And all I talked about was film. I watched so much less film than I watch now. Like I watch so much more now. I mean, partially because I'm old and don't have a social life, but also because like there's just stuff. It's just everywhere. It's so easy to get anything.
But how does that change the experience of like, so here's what I think of. Like, for me, I mostly watch television over movies, but movies are more important to me. I feel like I'll watch television like I'm eating potato chips. Like,
Well,
it's good, it's fine.
what do you mean by
It's,
television?
I mean, like, just TV shows. Like, I'll watch
But on TV or like streaming?
on streaming. Sorry, let me
Okay.
clarify. Okay, so here's what I'm saying is like with movies, I don't watch them as much as I watch television shows, so
Okay.
on streaming. But when I do watch it, to me, it's like an experience. It's like going out for a decent
Okay.
dinner. And for me, that's like it's a richness.
Sure.
Whereas I can, you know, there's only so much I can say about the 10 Simpsons episododes I watched earlier
Right,
today. But like I could tell you like this movie I watched last night that really had a profound effect on me or was a fascinating experience.
well, I think for me, I feel that way, but I want that richness every day. But the
That's
real
good.
question
Okay.
is, how is it different? The real question is, how is the experience different if you bought the DVD or the Blu-ray? First of all, buying a movie blind, which is something I used to do all the time, is such a risky gamble. There's definitely movies that I thought I liked just because I bought it, and I was like, I bought it, I own it, I have to like it.
I buy movies that, except in rare cases where I bought something blind, most of the time I'll buy something I already watched. So I still use the streaming service. I'm not against
So
streaming.
you'll
I love
go
streaming.
and you'll watch something on streaming, like it, and then buy it.
Yes, if I feel like I have trouble finding, because it's happened a couple of times where a streaming service, like for example, when Netflix moved away into their own original content, they dumped a lot of
Yeah.
movies and stuff, right? And
Yeah.
what happens is like it got to a point where it was hard to find things. So I will buy something on the off chance that it doesn't end up on streaming again. There's some things that I kind of missed, and because I was like, oh, it's on streaming, and then it's not there anymore. So that's kind of it. That's mostly it. And what I like about having the DVD, like DVDs or Blu-rays, is just it's just that option just in case. Or if your internet goes out,
Right, sure.
what do you do?
Right,
Or you're having a really, New Mexico is very windy, especially during certain seasons. So if it's super windy and the Wi-Fi is like wobbling a lot, what can I do? I could play video games or I could put it on a DVD,
Right,
read.
or read,
But
yeah.
yeah, I'm not against streaming. I love streaming, and you're right. I do, you know, when I'm thinking about what you were saying, I stream a lot more than I watch my DVDs, but the DVDs for me are just like I know I have them and I own them. And Criterion is the only streaming service that I've seen that actually has extras
Yes,
and
that's right,
commentary.
right, right.
And at the very least, you buy a DVD or Blu-ray that is a that they put into it,
Right,
the
you'll
all
find
that
those
extra
things.
content.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I wish more, I do love that about Criteria, and I do wish more other places did that. But I love the experience of like the Russian roulette of it, or not Russian roulette, the roulette of it, just like on around Christmas, I put on Shudder, and I saw they had Black Christmas by Bob Clark, and I was like, all right, I've heard of this, let me try, and I fucking loved it. And I was like, that great feeling of when you love a movie and you're like, holy shit, like, what a whim that I just saw it and then watched it and it ended up being awesome.
Oh yeah. No, you're right. That's a joy. You know, similar happened to me when I watched Hitchcock Truffaut.
Yeah.
That's on Criterion. I watched it without really knowing what was going to happen, and I was even though I know these movies, I know that Truffaut really loved Hitchcock, but that experience of watching that documentary was it was just on a whim, and it ended up being really great.
Yeah, me too. And after that, I went and watched, because Criterion has a lot of Hitchcock. After I watched that movie, I ended up watching a lot of Hitchcock movies that I've never seen. Like, I finally saw the 39 Steps, and it's
Which
fucking
one?
great.
Really?
The Lady Vanishes is basically a comedy,
Oh,
and I did
all
not
right.
know that. It's just like this woman's on a train, and she thinks it's so good. Anyway. Let's take a break and we'll come back with our current obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today by Nadia Cater. Nadia, this is the obsessions segment. This is where we confess our current pop culture obsessions. What are you currently obsessed with?
Okay. I'm currently obsessed with Stardew Valley.
And there you go. Is that, so you referenced that before when I said Animal Crossing.
Yep.
You've moved to Stardew Valley. So tell me about Stardew Valley.
So it's a farming simulation. The concept is whatever sex you choose for your character, your grandfather dies, leaves you a farm,
sure,
and you bring it back to life. That's been not been worked on for many years. So you grow crops, you find resources, you build relationships with the townspeople, you unlock special events. It's one of those games that they call cozy, like cozy
sure.
game. You could like faint if you're in a mine and you get attacked too much, like by monsters and whatever, but it's just
Wait,
very
there are
mostly
monsters?
very cute monsters, like
Okay.
slime monsters, bats, but it's only one part of that, of the game. Most of the game is farming. It's just building crops and selling
So
them.
I played Animal Crossing, and a lot of people who played Animal Crossing now play Stardew Valley. They're both cozy games. They have similarities. Can you tell me like where it's similar, or like what Stardew Valley has that Animal Crossing lacks?
Yeah, so the art is very different. So Animal Crossing is more three-dimensional. I would say what Stardew Valley has that Animal Crossing lacks is there's always something to do. I think after a while with Animal Crossing, because there isn't a farming element to it, and I'm not saying that every game needs that necessarily, but after a while, I was getting kind of bored with Animal Crossing.
Right,
And there's...
Yeah, it hits a plateau.
Yeah, and Stardew Valley can, that can happen with it, but
Sure.
it takes longer because it's just there's more involvement, and I feel like Animal Crossing didn't have a lot of interaction with the environment, and at the very least, in Stardew Valley, they have fishing, which is similar, farming, mining, building, crafting stuff, building
So,
resources.
do you sell what you farm?
Yes.
So there's a big economic part of it.
Yeah, and you're not like, I don't know, I feel like you're on hook with this raccoon, whereas it doesn't feel like that in Stardew
He's like,
Valley.
oh, you want to build a house? All right, okay, well, now I own you for a while.
Yeah, exactly. It's just very, it's very cutesy. In a different way than I would say Animal Crossing was.
Well, how
I just like
cutesy.
farming. I don't know, it's sweet. Like you have events. So there's very one-dimensional like townspeople who all have different lives and different stuff going on in it. And you build relationships with them very simply by giving them gifts. And over time, when you reach like a certain amount of like what they call hearts, like if you fill up certain hearts, they have special events. So you learn a little bit more about them or something, and you become friends, or you can romance
Yeah,
some
can you get a
characters.
can you get married?
You can, yeah, you can get
Do you have
married.
kids?
You can, but they like adopt children. It's kind of weird,
Okay.
but I guess it's like nope, no sex happens here. Yeah, you can get married, you can adopt children. An alternative to marriage is there's like a sewer monster
Sure,
that you
okay.
can become friends with, and you can ask him to move into your house.
All right, so just
So.
like real life.
Yeah.
So, okay. So is there like magic in it?
There is some magic in it. Not a lot, but there is a wizard that lives in the woods, and you can also become friends with him too. And eventually you learn more about his life, and it's just very peaceful. I found myself reach points sometimes where I don't want to put a lot into, like, I'm tired, it's a long day, I just want to do something really small. So like, oh, you know what? I'm going to collect 400 pieces of wood so I can build this thing on my farm. And that's all I'm going to do for like 2 hours and then go to bed.
Where do you play it?
I play it on my computer.
Okay.
Yeah. With my Steam, through Steam.
Okay.
My partner has a Steam Deck, which is basically, it's the handheld version of Steam that you
Yeah.
can buy games for your
Yeah.
computer and some of them work on the deck. So she plays it on that. There are options to play together, so you can play with people and like build your own
Okay.
farm together. And one of the benefits of that is that you just collect resources a lot faster than just doing it by one person. But I don't really like that. I like it as my own like solitary activity, but
Sure.
me and Danielle would like sit on the couch together and listen to a podcast and play our own separate
Mutual
games.
gaming. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just peaceful.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I
That's
really
awesome.
enjoy it.
That's very cool.
What are you obsessed with?
I'm halfway through a book that I'm really liking. It's called Opposable Thumbs: How Siskel and Ebert Changed Movies Forever by Matt
Ooh.
Singer. And it's a history of Siskel and Ebert. It starts with both of them before their careers intersected, both of them as journalists and writers, and then the Siskel and Ebert show. And for me, I guess maybe because of my age, Siskel and Ebert was a big deal. Like in the 90s, before, I mean, you had the internet, but it wasn't like what it is now. You didn't have like YouTube, you didn't have like YouTube essayists, you didn't have podcasts. Like when I was a young, burgeoning, like film nerd, Siskel and Ebert was like everything. They were like, I mean, even as a little kid, I remember being like, oh, you can be a grown up who talks about movies all the time, and like that's what you do, and it's important in a way. You know what I mean? Like it was it like showed me, and I don't think, from my point of view now, I don't think they're the greatest critics. I don't think they're the greatest writers. I disagree with a lot of their analyses. But at the same time, like, and the book makes this point, whether or not you think that what they did was, fed too much into marketing or was too shallow and stuff like that, it did have a huge effect on film culture. Having two critics argue with each other about something on TV, was fascinating. And something people don't remember is in the early, before the internet, let's say there was a movie coming out that you were interested in, maybe you'd see the trailer when you saw it, when you went to the movies to see something else, or maybe you'd see TV spots on network TV, but you couldn't see clips. You couldn't get a real taste of it. Like I, as a young nerd, like when I would find out like, oh, Siskel and Ebert are reviewing, whatever, She's All That tonight, I'd be like, cool, I get to see seeing some She's All That. It was so formative for me. And the book is just so, it's so well written. It's got a nice tone. It's very easy. I'm learning things about them. People like wonder, like, did they really hate each other? Did they really like each other? And the truth is, in the beginning, they really hated each other. But then, like, when they became like famous together, they quickly started liking each other and actually became friends. They even had like a secret handshake, which is just adorable. But they annoyed each other and disagreed with each other. So like the arguments about movies is real. But like, went to each other's weddings and like, they weren't like hang out with each other, but they did, as the time went on, they were friends. They did like each other. But they were super competitive. And that's the thing that blows my, like in really petty ways. Like we know the term Siskel and Ebert because when they started in public access, and it wasn't called Siskel and Ebert, and then their second show was called At the Movies with Siskel and Ebert, and they told Roger Ebert, like, this will be season one. When we do season two, we'll change it and call it At the Movies with Ebert and Siskel. And he was like, okay, I'll do it. And then when the second season came, they were like, oh, we can't reshoot the opening. And he was mad, and he was mad about it, like real petty shit. Like, oh, he's in first class, why am I not in first class? They gave Roger Ebert shorter than Gene Siskel, so they gave him a pillow, a cushion to sit on, so on camera they looked better. They looked more like the same height. And then Siskel's like, why does he get a pillow? Like really baby competitive shit. That's so tacky. But I'm loving it. Perhaps it shows my age because I don't know, if young people have any concept of Siskel and Ebert or their influence, for good and for bad. But I'm loving it. It's a real fun read.
That sounds great. I remember when Siskel and Ebert played themselves on The Critic, and I feel like we're
Yeah.
both dating ourselves. Do young people even know any of these references right now?
I don't know if they know The Critic. I don't think The
Oh
Critic's
man.
streaming anywhere.
It was on a Crackle. It's on something else now.
Is
But
Crackle still around?
yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
You know what? Now I'm not sure. Okay. It was streaming on Crackle for a bit.
Yeah.
It's on one of those, like, does anyone even have the
Right.
streaming service?
Right.
Yeah, but oh, it's on Tubi. Okay, there you go. That's where
There
you
you
can
go.
find The Critic. And you can watch the musical episode where Siskel and Ebert sing to each other.
I love Tubi.
I love Tubi too, because it's rarely, at times, very random. You find some really interesting movies on
Yeah,
there.
and you'll find that so often lately, I'll be looking for something and it'll be like on Tubi, and I'll be like, holy shit, it's on Tubi.
Nowhere else, though. It's on Tubi.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't mind the ads.
No, I don't mind ads either.
So one of the things I've always been interested in about Siskel and Ebert is that that was such a unique premise. I know after Siskel passed away, they replaced him with Roper. So it was Ebert and Roper.
Yeah,
And
which
that's
is
what I
not
remember.
great. Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Roper's okay. But there isn't a lot of there isn't that, film critic personality anymore. Like, I feel like we don't even know who film critics are. They're just, you'll
Well,
look up a movie and yeah, a critic will be writing about it, but it's not like you follow them the same way you'll follow a personality like Siskel and Ebert.
I agree and disagree. I
Okay.
agree that like critics who work for newspapers and magazines, we don't. But I think the whole landscape has changed. Like we do know podcasters that do movie podcasts. We do know people who do video essays, that's criticism.
Oh, totally.
I consider this show criticism. I consider myself a critic. Somebody listens to this show. So I think in that way, yes, but the type of critic that they were, there's none that's like really popular. Like maybe you might know a few names like A.O. Scott because he's the New York Times, but really, that's not really popular. Ask a young person who A.O. Scott is, and they're like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Yeah, I think like people would go to like YouTube or Discord or something like that. That's what
Yeah.
I mean though, like exactly on tel like broadcasts on television is something that you could check out once a week.
No. Well,
It's very different.
I think criticism, that kind of criticism in general has been kind of devalued by Rotten Tomatoes. Because whether you write like if I write a long piece that's nuanced and I talk about what I like and I don't like, someone for Rotten Tomatoes reads the whole thing and they decide whether it's a positive or a negative, an up or a down, a yes or no. And then that's just a data point that's put into a metric. And that's where you get the percent rating. And that's the thing, Siskel and Ebert came up with the thumbs up, thumbs down thing. And that's when critics at the time were against them. Because they were like, a movie is more than thumbs up, thumbs down. In the newspapers, Siskel and Ebert would both use star systems, which I think is better.
I mean, yeah, because they're really, you can't have half a thumb up, right? It's just yes or no, but star systems at least, like,
Yeah.
there's a little nuance here. Three star
Sometimes they
versus
would
four.
add, sometimes they'd add like modifiers like thumbs way up for this movie or a reluctant thumb up for this movie.
Reluctant thumb
Yeah,
up.
they would do that shit. Oh boy. All right, I think we did it. I think we did a whole fully.
A whole full, is that what you call it?
Fully,
Like,
yeah.
okay, when you first said that to me, I was like, what on earth are you talking about? What are we doing?
Yeah, I said we're doing a fully.
Yeah, I thought you were saying Foley, like Foley artist. I'm like, well, there's something I was supposed to do that I totally
Yeah,
missed.
we were doing all a whole episode on Foley artists. Where are your coconuts?
Your raw chickens to slap against the
Mangiorno, I was joined today by Ms. Nadia Kater. Nadia, we end every episode by saying
Go bye bye.